Chaz does this to me every time, man. I love the music so much. It takes me a minute to get started, man. DJ Cash, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm not going to lie. I'm feeling good. You know, I worked earlier today, and now I'm just here with you.
That's good stuff, man. WG and Nightside, Doma T Pongo here with you guys until 1 a.m. Normally, you hear me Monday afternoons, middays doing news. I also do news on Saturday mornings from 6 to 11:30 a.m. from 6 to 7. I'm covering news from Mike Steven, who hosts Outside the Loop Radio. Make sure you follow them at Outside the Loop Radio on Instagram. Then after that, you've got Lou Manfredini, as Uncle Lou, as I like to call him, from 7 to 10, do news for him. And then after that, the King, WGN's own John Williams, from 10 to 12. So if you are a WGN listener, over the weekend, you can definitely check that out. Now, normally, and Cash knows this, when I do WGN Nightside, we have a lot of fun, and I try to stay away from politics, because I do politics all the time when I'm working the 9 to 5, when I'm in the newsroom. So I try to get a chance to get here overnight and just relax with you guys. But when there's some big political news or something exciting happening, I can't help but share this with you guys. And so I'm going to ask Cash this. We got the early voting tallies so far, right? How many people voted early? First of all, did you vote early?
I did not go vote yet. But
not yet. You will. Are you going to do early voting, or do you prefer election day voting?
I'll probably vote early just so I ain't got to deal with lines and everything.
I was just telling somebody that early voting was too adult for me. Like, that's too much adulting. It's too responsible. It's too responsible.
So you're not adulting properly is what you're saying.
I prefer to not adult properly.
Okay.
You know, I want to save that for my 30s. You know, like, wow. Paying
Aren't
bills on
close,
time,
though?
Voting
you're
early.
You're close to 30, though.
Well, let's not get into specifics here. Okay. Mm-hmm. 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 How old are you, kid?
23.
No. Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, to be young. Okay. All right. But if you had to guess this midterm compared to 2014, would you suspect that more people voted early up to this point or fewer?
I would hope that more people have voted early, but I feel like the people are going to let me down and they did not vote early like they should.
Wow, final answer.
That's my final. They did not vote early like they should up until this point.
Fortunately, you are incorrect.
Oh, wow. Wow. Go crazy, people. Look at y'all.
Yeah.
Me wrong.
So, you know, got these numbers from the Chicago Board of Election. In the city of Chicago, so far, 102,000 people have voted early.
That's amazing. And you're not one of them.
And I am not one of them.
Nope.
And 4 years ago, 7 days out, this exact period during the midterms 4 years ago in 2014, only 63,000 people.
Oh man, that's
voted
a huge
early by this
leap.
Point. It's
but
a
you
big
see the
jump,
difference
man.
And why. I mean, I ain't gonna say nothing, but
well, yeah, no, it's valid. I think you know, if there's a silver lining in how divisive our politics are today, it's the fact that it can make some people who were apathetic before, who were politically disengaged, it can make them re-engage at this level on both sides of the aisle, too. I mean,
yeah,
he's riling
sure.
up his base, and Democrats are riled up as well and fired up. And so to talk a little bit about that, but also to educate us on the best way to vote for some of those elected officials whose names aren't so familiar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always remember the midterm guys. You know, you remember Dick Durbin. You remember,
right.
Like, you remember these big names in Illinois politics. But who we don't always remember, the names we don't always recognize, are those judges.
Mm.
And
yeah, that's true.
You are much more likely, the average citizen, I don't care if you get a parking ticket, I don't care if you've got a boot on your car, I don't care if you've got to go to, you know, traffic court for whatever reason, you're more likely to get in front of a judge
mm-hmm.
than you are to get in front of Senator Dick Durbin.
Yes. The last time I was in front of a judge, I was in high school, and he threatened to pull all of my scholarships that I had going for me. And I haven't been to court since.
Oh, my God. So you know, so now you vote for those judges, I bet. I hope.
I do. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I didn't like him, but.
But he spared you.
He did.
He spared
Barely.
You.
Yes.
Well, to talk a little bit about this with us is Nicholas Cummings, who is a board member of the Cook County Bar Association, and he is also the chair of the Judicial Evaluation Committee. I had to really get that one out. The Judicial Evaluation Committee. And on the phone right now, Nicholas Cummings. Nicholas, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thank you for staying up late with us and jumping on with me, especially on such short notice. I appreciate it.
Man, when I got the email and said the slot is tonight from 11 to 1, I had to double take and make sure that it wasn't, you know, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. because at 11 p.m., you know, I'm usually not up on the phone.
Well, thank you for making an exception tonight, man. We 24/7 live and local, baby. You never know. WGN Radio might give you that call.
Well, and for something like this, I feel like the opportunity is, it's worth staying awake. So any opportunity that I can get to try and help educate those about something that a lot of voters are not educated on, I try to make sure I can seize that opportunity.
Well, I really appreciate it. Let's jump right into it. So, Nicholas Cummings, you're with the Cook County Bar Association, and you guys have a system through which you select judges or grade judges on whether we should vote for them if they're a candidate, and if they're already on the bench, whether or not we should retain them. Walk us through what all of that even means and why it's even important to pay attention to these judges.
Well, there are three ways to become a judge in Cook County. The first is to run for a vacant seat. It's usually countywide. The other is to run in a sub-circuit. There are 15 different judicial sub-circuits in Cook County. The last is to be elected by the circuit court judges to be an associate judge, and that's a process that the public doesn't necessarily interact with. And so what happens is the lawyers, first of all, I should say that in order to be a judge in the state of Illinois, you have to be a licensed attorney. Mm-hmm. And I know that may sound kind of silly, but there have been instances, I think within 2018 alone, I can think of two where you had people who had been stripped of their law license and continued to try and pursue the bench.
Oh, wow.
So first of all, you have to be a licensed attorney. And when these attorneys want to become judges, they have to go through an evaluation process done by the various bar associations. And the Cook County Bar Association is one such bar association that participates in the Alliance of Bar Associations, which starting in 2019 is 12 bar associations, primarily made up of underrepresented groups, African Americans, women, Hispanic and Latino lawyers, lesbian, gay, bisexual attorneys, all have and Asian attorneys all have a bar association that's affiliated in this alliance. And they there's a questionnaire that the individuals fill out. That questionnaire is vetted, and people conduct an investigation. Members of the bar associations are selected to conduct an investigation. The person is interviewed, and then each bar association takes all of that information and evaluates that candidate pursuant to their own rules and processes. There are six criteria in which we evaluate candidates. Mm-hmm. You know, including their legal knowledge, their temperament, whether they're sensitive to diversity and bias, even their health. So we look at it's a very comprehensive look at these candidates, and that's for people who want to run for judge. Okay,
right.
The process is very similar for those who want to stay judge.
Got it. So thinking about that, how each their bar associations for each different demo or each marginalized group, if you will, and, you know, the Cook County Bar Association is the oldest African-American bar association in the country. What are some of the issues, or what are some of those points in judges' voting or, you know, judicial records? What are the things that you're looking at that might be different from what other bar associations might look at?
We pay attention to the sensitivity to diversity and bias. I mean, it's not a secret that across the country, and especially here in Cook County, that a lot of our defendants that appear in our criminal courthouses are black and brown, and fit that demographic. So we pay attention because the majority of our judges don't match that same demographic. We pay attention to how those judges tend to treat not only those defendants, but their views when it comes to diversifying the bench and diversifying the profession, and any efforts that they've taken to do that. Recently, in this particular election cycle, groups like Injustice Watch and the Judicial Accountability PAC have sort of added to the information that we have available to us at the Bar Association. So that's also aided or at least provided some additional information to help us weigh our evaluation for this election cycle.
And what are the ratings like? So, you know, you walked us through the process, what it takes to become a judge, what it means to become a candidate. And then you get to this point. And then once these people come before you and they fill out these questionnaires and you guys review them, what are you looking at? And how do you come out with these ratings? And what are some of the ratings that you give out?
I'll sort of work backwards. So for those that are lawyers that want to become judges, the Cook County Bar Association will say whether or not someone is recommended, highly recommended, or not recommended to be a judge. Other bar associations use the moniker of qualified, highly qualified, or not qualified. In terms of some of the things that we look at, particularly in the questionnaire, we want to see if the person is able to articulate. Part of the questionnaire specifically asks about issues affecting minority communities, affecting women, and affecting other gay, lesbian, and bisexual community, like certain specific marginalized groups the questionnaire asks about. We want to see if the judge is able to articulate either work they've done in that area, their own personal views in that area, any experience they have in that area, make sure they're not, that it doesn't, it's not allowed to fester in their courtroom, either in like jury selection or how they sentence candidates. Those types of things are what we tend to look for within the Cook County Bar. Our ratings are available on our website. I'm not going to give you any sort of specific ratings. And also the Alliance of Bar Associations, collectively, the ratings are available on voteforjudges.org.
And the website is CookCountyBar.org and then voteforjudges.org as well. That's where you guys can check that out. I'm talking to Nicholas Cummings, who is on the board of the Cook County Bar Association. One more thing before I let you go, and thank you once again for taking the time to jump on. What would you have voters know about the importance of voting for those judges? Because as we said before at the top of the show, these are the names that you're least likely to know. And oftentimes when I'm at the ballot box, I know in years past before I got into this business, I would just pick the names that looked that I just liked. If I like the name, if your name starts with a D, mine starts with a D, you're going to be my judge. You know, I didn't really have a rhyme or reason. And, you know, as we grew, these are the things. When we looked at, you know, as I started to dig into the Laquan McDonald case, for example, and different cases of police shootings and different situations or even minor situations that didn't result in loss of life as far as police shootings go, these activists would start to send me these reports about a judge's record and how, you know, if people voted, it would have made the difference in so many people's lives. And it's not until something happens that we begin to go back and review some of that information and really think logically about that. Can you just walk us through why it's important to take these judges seriously and to take lists like these and recommendations like these seriously?
So recently I had the opportunity to address the League of Women Voters on this very issue. And one of the things that I explained to them, and I don't mean any offense to any listeners that you might have that are military veterans or law enforcement agents, but in my view, the chief protector of our rights and liberties in this country are judges. So the decision to take someone's liberty or property or the determination of rights of parties is usually done in a courtroom and not on the street or any battlefield. And that is why, in my view, it's important that we pay attention to who is on the bench and who these men and women that we place there and call honorable. Because those are the people that interpret the laws that your state representatives and your state senators, which are also very important people that you elect, they're the ones that determine what that law means or what they think the legislature intended in that law. So if you are going through foreclosure proceedings, or if you got pulled over for texting, but really you were on GPS, or, you know, there's a lot of small, minor things that need to be interpreted by people who need to be able to judge fairly and not have inherent bias because you walked in the courtroom looking some type of way.
Nicholas, I really appreciate you. Can you give us that website one more time before we let you go?
It's cookcountybar.org and voteforjudges.org.
Voteforjudges.org. Thank you so much, Nicholas Cummings. Again, he's with the Cook County Bar Association. Voteforjudges.org, cookcountybar.org. If you are planning to vote early, you're going to be one of those hundreds of thousands of people who have already voted. Well, I guess 100,000, give or take. Then you guys definitely want to utilize all the resources that you can, and this is chief among them. Again, thanks to Nicholas for jumping on. We'll be right back in a moment. This is WGN Nightside. WGN Nightside, Doma T. Pongo, here all evening with you until about 1 a.m. Cash is my producer. Thank you for helping me out today, Cash, and for always being there, you know, in the studio with me every time we host. And thank you to the listeners. I've been meaning to say this, and I don't want to get too sappy here, but since I started here at WGN Radio, the listeners have, you guys have really embraced me. You guys engage, you guys are texting right now. Thank you to the kind texter who just sent a note in. You guys can text the show at 312-981-7200, and I really appreciate this opportunity to share the mic with you guys. I'm also appreciating the opportunity to share the mic with someone I respect immensely. She is an artist. She is a creative. She's a thinker. She is a friend of mine, and she is also the associate director of programming for the Chicago Humanities Festival. Her name is Tiff Beatty. What's going on?
What's up, Domity? How you doing?
I'm good. And she's in studio with me. We're going to talk about the Chicago Humanities Festival before we get to news. And if you're willing, if you can stick around, we're going to have a few other guests on. We're going to talk about a few other topics. If you want to hang out, you can hang out.
Okay, we'll see. We'll
yeah,
see.
Before all that happens. But tell us what the Chicago Humanities Festival is. And again, thank you for coming by.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so the Chicago Humanities Festival next year, actually, we're celebrating 30 years. So stay tuned for more about our 30-year anniversary. But this year is very exciting as well. Our theme, every year is organized around a theme. We now are year-round programming, started out as a fall festival primarily. Now we're year-round, and our theme is graphic, and that's with an exclamation mark. So everything that comes to your mind when you hear that word, that's what our programming is expressing this fall. And we actually kicked off in March with a very well-known Chicago-based artist, LaToya Ruby Frazier, who was really amazing, just sort of contextualizing the theme. We had a couple other speakers on stage with her as well, including we can get into some more speakers, but you know, we really just pride ourselves on presenting smart and entertaining programming that compels you to think and ask more questions.
And if that didn't sell it enough already, Tom Hanks is going to be there this year.
So.
The Chicago Humanities Festival. We'll get to that. Yeah, we're going to talk about all of that. Doma T. Pongo, WGN Nightside. We're talking about the Chicago Humanities Festival. So for nearly 30 years, the Chicago Humanities Festival has been bringing compelling speakers and thoughtful programming to the city. And they hope that you leave these festival programs transformed with new insights and perspective that change how you see yourself, community, and our world. And that is directly from the pamphlet that I have in front of me. I wish I was so eloquent. I am not, but they are. The Chi Humanities Festival is from October 27th. It's already underway through November 11th. And one of the associate directors of programming, or the associate directors of programming, Tiff Beatty, is in the studio with us. She says there's only the one and the only. And so thank you for coming in. And one of the reasons I brought you by is because throughout the years, I've been covering the Chi Humanities Festival. And I love that the panels, the workshops, the speakers, the thoughtful conversations really center on, at the end of the day, at least for me, how easy it can be to affect change right where you are and where you're from. And, you know, I was talking to Patty about this before the show started, about when we think about what it means to transform our community, especially if you come from the communities we come from. I'm from Woodlawn, from the South Side, and from Calumet City, the South Suburbs. So I've had a chance to see two different sides of the coin.
Right.
And when we talk about things like violence in our community and on the south and west sides of the city, it just seems like so much to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to these breakout workshops and they're each on different topics, you find that efficient, effective, powerful people focused on a specific area. Mm-hmm. That was their purpose. That was their duty.
Mm-hmm.
And I was inspired by going to these workshops, by thinking about what my purpose is, what my lane is, and what's my duty. And mm-hmm. Thanks to TIP, I'm participating in a program on Friday, November 2nd, where we're honoring Ida B. Wells, who has been overlooked as far as history goes, especially when we talk about landmark journalism, powerful journalists who have changed the course of history. So talk a bit about this program, what we're going to be doing Friday night.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for that setup. That was so great. I was just thinking about what you were saying, just in terms of what the Chicago Humanities represents and, you know, who comes together and, you know, the power of those moments. And so we're very thankful to have Doma T a part of this program. It really is all about the people who come together to tell these stories and to use their platform to continue these powerful legacies. So as you said, we are going to be celebrating Ida B. Wells. And I want to just also state that Ida B. Wells has not been overlooked by everyone. Her family, especially one of her great granddaughters, Michelle Dester, will be a part of this program. And the Ida B. Wells family has for four generations carried her legacy, protected it, preserved it. And they've been fighting and fundraising for a monument that will be sculpted by Richard Hunt, thanks to a successful campaign, which got a lot of support actually from Nicole Hannah Jones from the New York Times, who will also be a part of this program. Wow. She was one of those folks on Twitter tweeting the campaign out, along with Miriam Kaba, who's spent a lot of time organizing in Chicago and is also a part of this legacy. Miriam won't be a part of this program, but we send her some love as well. But we will have Chicago's own Eve L. Ewing, as well as Natalie Moore, who are very already in this conversation, I think, about the South Side and celebrating these legacies. But this, I think, is a very important moment to bring them together, particularly with some of their recent writing. Natalie Moore is the South Side, and Eve Ewing's most recent book, The Ghost of the Schoolyard, which is about school closings and racism on the yes. South Side of Chicago. So all of these women talking about these things really are an embodiment of the Ida B. Wells legacy. But also, you know, we're coming together to really talk about who Ida B. Wells was and, you know, the legacy that has continued in her name through, honestly, journalists like you, Doma T. You know, we really appreciate you using your platform and everything that you do for the community.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Natalie Moore is also a Southside Bureau reporter, Bureau Chief for WBEZ. Dr. Ewing, phenomenal writer, as Tiff just said, working on a piece about the school closings, Chicago Public Schools, and thinking about these phenomenal women who are part of this program, yourself included. I feel like we skipped a step. We didn't really talk about why Ida B. Wells.
Yeah,
is so impactful. Who was she? Break that down. Break down that history for us.
So, I mean, she was the journalist activist. I think that's a term that's kind of coming up today. Journalists really starting to see their role in this legacy of the movement around, whether it's Black Lives Matter or Me Too or Time's Up, there really is a role for journalists in the movement. Mm-hmm. And Ida B. Wells, I think, was the embodiment of what a journalist that is about the movement and about the people can really do. She was known for her reporting on lynching. So she had an anti-lynching campaign that really is, you know, made a big difference in society and really brought that conversation of Black men who were being lynched a lot of times for rapes that they did not commit. There were a lot of stories that were coming out because of the racism of the time that she brought to the surface to really, you know, shine a light on that racism that people just were not talking about. And a lot of people were not necessarily happy about that. So she's, you know, had to go through her struggles as a woman to survive, you know, and to raise her family as well. So she was dealing with, you know, just being a Black woman in society as well as moving and shaping culture. She's also one of the founders of the NAACP.
Which doesn't get talked about often enough.
Right,
We talk about, it's not only today that we see, you know, women in movements marginalized. But even back then, you know, we credit a lot of men with founding the NAACP. But Ida B. Wells was instrumental in that. And just to really paint the picture of the time, back when these lynchings were happening, people didn't talk about who was being lynched. Sometimes she had to do painstaking work sometimes to identify who some of these people were. And with these lynchings, sometimes people were tarred, sometimes people were burned. And, you know, she wasn't able to go and look through their dental records to find out who this person was. She had to do some footwork, some legwork, and really go and talk to this person and that person and find out who this might be, talk to the relatives and find out the true story of what happened. And as she began to report on who these people were, compiling lists and names, she's a large part of the reason why we even know how many people were lynched at that time.
True.
She, as she was doing all of that work, she was receiving death threats. And this is pre-Twitter, y'all. So if you get a death threat back in the day, they had to know where you were to get that to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm laughing matter-of-factly, not laughing because it's funny.
Scary
stuff. And so what we find out is, and one of the reasons that you put together this program and even decided to call it Overlooked is because Ida B. Wells, who was creating obituaries for people who were lynched, when she passed away, did she even have an obituary herself?
She did not. Well, at least not by the New York Times, which is sort of, you know, that is the state of the culture, is what we look to for, you know, the people who are important in our society. Just looking at this project. So the New York Times has now come up with this project where they are reflecting on their own history, thankfully, and they are looking at very important, prominent figures who were overlooked, whose obituaries were never written. And it's not surprising to see that trend, that those who are overlooked are primarily women and primarily people of color. People who are clearly now, retrospectively, as we look back at history, very important figures such as Ida B. Wells, but just were not, you know, were not written about when they died. And that says a lot about what we thought about their life and what our culture thought about them and the work that they did as people. And Ida B. Wells is one of those people that we're thankful that the New York Times is recognizing her legacy. But we also want to recognize these women who are doing the work. We want to say their names and we want to uplift them. And we want to invite, you know, more women and people who appreciate this culture to this event to celebrate together. There will be people from the Ida B. Wells family in the house. Michelle Desta has confirmed she's invited the family. Eve has invited her family.
Wow.
So this is really, you know, it's a Southside celebration of a Southside legacy. You know, we really want people to come out who really do connect to this story and want to see more people connect to the story.
And you guys can do that, can purchase tickets. It's going to be at the Harold Washington Cultural Center in Bronzeville at 47th and King Drive. That's 4701 South King. This Friday, November 2nd, 7:30 to 8:30. It's going to get you in and get you out, get a lot of good conversation, inspiring conversation, some context to a lot of the things we're talking about. Where can people purchase tickets?
You can purchase tickets at chicagohumanities.org, and you can actually just search Bronzeville in the search bar at the top of the page on the website.
Got you. And student tickets, $10?
Student tickets are $10.
Student tickets, general admission tickets are $20.
Yep, not bad. Check that out.
Yeah, not bad. And so that's all happening at the Harold Washington Cultural Center. And the program itself, I'll be reading Ida B. Wells' obituary. So that's my involvement in this. So, you know, on that same night, I hate to tell you guys this because it's already sold out. On that same night, Friday night, at the Harris Theater, Tom Hanks is going to be speaking as part of a Bank of America program with the Chicago Humanities Festival.
Yeah.
But, you know, as
that's
I tell
everybody, the beauty of the festival, though. You
there's
know,
so many
you have
things
to make choices. There's so many beautiful things happening at the same time.
And honestly, if you had to choose between me and Tom Hanks, who are you choosing?
You already know.
Exactly.
I'm looking at him.
That's
you know,
what I'm
in
saying.
In the flesh. In the flesh.
You see what I'm saying, Cash? Some people appreciate me around here.
What? Nobody said you weren't appreciated.
Domitee's love.
I just love thinking of Cash. It's like one of my favorite pastimes. It's like this is how we do this. This is how we do this hosted thing. But yeah, no, it's happening this Friday. Talk a bit about some of the other programs happening in Bronzeville, because as you said, if you go to shyhumanities.org, click the Bronzeville banner, you see all of the events that are happening on the city south side.
Yeah.
And you guys laser focused on Bronzeville. Why?
So we actually have a couple of different neighborhoods. Chicago Humanities a couple years ago got this great idea. We have about 90 programs this fall within a span of about 2 weeks. So the new movement is hubs, and specifically neighborhood hubs. So it's about creating sort of a day of programming in one area, in some cases an evening. So in this case, it'll be an evening in Bronzeville. We'll have four programs that evening. So Overlook program will be one of those programs. I can talk a little bit about the other programs, but I just want to also talk about the other hubs. So mm-hmm. we also have a hub in South Shore, which is at the South Shore Cultural Center. That's on November 7th in the evening. And we have a hub in Hyde Park, which is the day after Bronzeville night, actually, which is November 3rd. We'll be in Hyde Park all day on Saturday. So.
And you're tuned in to WGN Nightside. We'll be back with Tiff Beatty in a moment. WGN Nightside, Doma T. Pongo. Tiff Beatty is here with the Shy Humanities Festival. After I wrap up with Tiff, we're actually going to talk about Kanye West, who tweeted today that he will no longer be taking part in political conversations. He feels like he was used. We'll tell you why. And a special surprise, we're talking to GLC. Who is really close with Kanye West, one of Kanye's best childhood friends, and he's going to shed some light on kind of, you know, Kanye's thinking throughout this whole thing, but also he's going to weigh in on some of the messages that Kanye went to the White House to get across, which kind of got lost in translation as we watched that whole debacle of a news conference or whatever you want to call that. So stay tuned for that. He's coming on at 12:30. Or perhaps early. I'm going to see if I can get him to come on a little earlier. But right now we're talking to Tiff Beatty, and we're talking about the legacy of Ida B. Wells. Friday, November 2nd, 7:30 to 8:30 at the Harold Washington Cultural Center. We're having an event that is a discussion with WBEZ's Natalie Moore, Dr. Eve Ewing, and investigative reporter for the New York Times, Nicole Hannah Jones. As far as this conversation goes, when the event kicks off, I'll be reading Ida B. Wells's obituary, because they had to go back and kind of put this obituary together, because the New York Times went back and looked at their archives and found that they overlooked the obituaries of so many prominent people of color and so many prominent women in history. And they had this whole project where they go back and rewrite these obituaries and tell those stories and uplift those people. And for the program's sake, as far as that goes, what happens after I uplift the obituary of Ida B. Wells?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So after Doma T opens the program with the reading of the obituary, so we really get into, you know, the spirit of the program. We welcome the spirit of Ida B. Wells into the room through her story, and then we go straight into the panel. So this is where Natalie Moore moderates the discussion with Nicole Hannah Jones, Eve Ewing, and Michelle Duster. And so they're all going to bring their perspectives, as all Chicago Humanities Festival events do. We bring, you know, thoughtful leaders and experts in their fields together to have conversations, to really explore from their personal perspectives you know, what the topic is at hand. So they'll be talking about the legacy of Ida B. Wells, but also their current work. So Eve actually is working, and she sort of let this slip in our conversation as we're preparing for the program, but she's working on a book about 1919. So those of you, you know, who are familiar with Chicago history know that there were some riots. There's, you know, very sort of, well, that even that word, like how we talk about, you know, violence riots in our history, and riots, you know, like just sort of going back to those moments in our history, and through that context. And this really is putting, you know, this is around Ida B. Wells' time as well. You know, she came for the Great Migration. She was here around the turn of the century. And so, you know, just really talking about what was happening during that time, but then leading up into this current moment. So what have been the struggles from Ida B. Wells through civil rights to, you know, all the movements that have led up to this current moment, the movement that we're in right now, the movement that is, you know, that has led us to Congress Parkway being renamed Ida B. Wells Drive.
Yeah, when is that taking effect?
Yeah, I know it's happening soon. You know, I know it's real because Michelle Duster confirmed that she had been working
Michelle
on
Duster
it.
Michelle Duster is Ida's
great-granddaughter.
Great-granddaughter,
mm-hmm. She's also an educator at Columbia College. She's a writer herself. She's written two books about her great-grandmother. Has other work out there as well. So check her out. Just phenomenal women who really have their own legacy as well. So we want to make sure that we're also, you know, as much as we're raising up the ancestors, this really is also about, you know, how those stories inform the way that we live today and the way that we uplift the women, specifically the Black women who are doing the work. So, yeah, we're really excited about it.
Big thank you to Tiff Beatty. You guys can get your tickets at shyhumanities.org. Where can people follow the organization on social media?
At Shy Humanities. So it's at CHI Humanities, HUMANITIES. And that's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that. Or we're Chicago Humanities Festival on Twitter or on Facebook. But yeah, you'll find us.
That's what's up. You can see the full schedule of events on shyhumanities.org. We'll be right back in a moment. Doma T. Pongo, WGNI side. Through the Wire. Oh my God. This is one of the albums, one of the songs that changed my life. Kanye West, one of the best musicians of all time, one of my favorite artists. I call him an artist and a musician because he is much more than a rapper and an MC. He is a producer, a visionary when it comes to fashion, a visionary when it comes to music and art and so many different things. And his first album, College Dropout, was one of those transformative albums for me. Like, that was the one that meant a lot to me personally. I think, how old were you when this came out, Cash? I think I was in eighth grade when that came out.
Well, if you were in eighth grade and you're way older than I am, that means that I was kidding.
I'm sorry, did you just say he's way older than you?
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Right, right.
Exactly. I'm only about a year older than Domity, wink, wink.
That's it. Just a year.
I remember when I was the youth around here. And
What was that transformative album for you, Andrea? Like, what was the album?
Oh, you both will make fun of me if I tell you this.
Just say Tupac.
This is a safe zone.
It's a safe zone. Yeah, yeah.
Safe space.
And with the DJ and the recently honored 40 under 40. All right, I'm just going to tell you guys because I trust you and we're in the safe space.
Okay, it's just us.
The Bangles Different Light.
The Bangles Different Light.
Everybody in here is laughing.
Everybody,
no. Adam and Mike, you're like the peanut gallery.
Nobody laughed.
All we did was Google. I'm not
right.
sure.
All we did was start
it's
typing
the Bengals.
Up.
Walk like an Egyptian. It was the 80s.
Oh,
there we go.
What do you mean? Oh my God! I used to be young.
We just needed one of the major songs that we knew, and then we were right there with you.
Hey, Judy Pilek trained me. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh wow!
Right, Doma T.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, uh-huh. She trained me
Her
too.
Her transformative album was, you know, like. Dinosaur Rock.
Wow.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh my God. I'm kidding.
Oh my gosh. Shout out to Judy. No,
I'm saving that soundbite and sending it to you.
But that, friends, I'm kidding. I thought this was the
I'm
safe
kidding.
Space.
I'm kidding.
But that is perfect though. So for you guys, the Bangles was yours. So College Dropout for me is your Bangles, right? So I just want you to understand how much Kanye West means to me. And so right now, Kanye has been in the news as of late, less for music, but more so for his political views, his political activism. And I'm happy to have on the line a person who was on that transformative album. He goes by the name of GLC. He was on the song Spaceship. He was on Late Registration, Drive Slow. He was also on Kendrick Lamar's first album, Section 80. He's a writer. He is a historian. He's an artist. He's also the owner of Ism Cakes, which is a vegan dessert alternative, which we'll talk about that in a moment as well. But bringing on none other than my brother GLC. How you doing? This might be me. GLC, are you there now?
Yeah, I'm here now. What's up, man? Love and respect, Domit.
Man, thank you for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man. You are appreciated as well, my brother.
Yo, so listen, we'll get right into it. I was looking on Twitter earlier, preparing for the show, just seeing what's going on, and Kanye started to tweet, and every time Kanye tweets, the world stops, right? So I was looking at Kanye's tweets, and about 8 hours ago, he tweeted that he's supporting creating jobs and opportunities for people who need them most, that he supports prison reform, that he supports common sense gun laws that make our world safer. And then he went on to talk about all of these other issues that he wanted to elevate before at the end saying that my eyes are now wide open. And now I realize I've been used to spread messages I don't believe in. He said, I'm distancing myself from politics and completely focusing on being creative. What made him tweet all of this out, and why was he clearing the record?
Well, I just look at it like this, man. A person pretty much moves at his level of understanding or his level of information. So once you are a recipient of information and the information comes from sources that are not reputable, then and the information may contain falsehoods. It may be things within that information that may be misguiding or misleading, you know? And then you fall victim to being misled and you out here speaking a rhetoric that's not your own. And, you know, you could be manipulated into believing that it's free thought and this and that. But the thing is, when you are in the midst of people, and you have the personality of a sponge, whoever you are around is pretty much, you know, the energy in which you become. So fortunate enough, I was able to reunite with my longtime friend, and I was able to give him some information and just let him know some things that he may have been wrong on or he may have been right on, and see what we could do to make the situation better. And when I say better, I feel like people make wiser decisions when they are moves that are based off righteous as well as factual information. I feel like when you make moves simply based off emotions, that could lead to destruction. But when you make moves based off of factual information, man, you have the opportunity to build. And with that being said, Kanye came to Chicago, and he saw, you know, the news and things that was going on. But fortunate enough, it was people that he knew that were actually out here in the field working with the community, working with the people, being amongst the people, and fighting the fight for liberation and equality. Economic, educational, political, social control of our environments, mm-hmm. you know. And with that information, Kanye felt an urgent need to address these issues. I feel like when he went to D.C., he spoke of these issues in the beginning. I was very happy. I was at home. I was looking like, yes, he said prison reform.
Right. And you're talking about the meeting with President Trump right here, right?
The meeting with Trump, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like he said, yes, prison reform. He said, bring jobs, create jobs in the Midwest, and like bring them to Chicago. You know, bring jobs back to America. I was like, yes. Then he said, reinstate mental health institutions. You know, all throughout the city. You know, things that we need that should even be in high schools. You know, help spread the arts curriculum throughout our public schools. Make learning fun. And I know that making learning fun works because I helped open up the first open enrollment arts high school in the history of Chicago. And it's under the lead of a phenomenal principal by the name of Beulah McLeod, who wrote the first arts curriculum for CPS, and the school is a level one neighborhood school. He was also talking about bringing factories to Chicago and things that could help, you know, push our momentum forward. But after he did that, man, it was kind of like a catastrophe in the eyes of many.
In the eyes of many. And what do you think caused it to go off the rails? Why do you think people looked at it as if it went off the rails? Because you have some people who have parsed the information that he put out there about prison reform, about freeing political prisoners, and about these jobs, and about everything that you spoke about. But then, you know, in that conversation with Trump, the topic went elsewhere. Where did it go, and what do you think that might have gotten lost in translation?
Well, I think due to the fact that I learned this from the great Malcolm X, man. He said that you can't look down on people because they don't see the world the way you see it. You know, and I paraphrase, you know, they don't have the level of understanding that you have. Because at some point, you didn't have the understanding that you have.
Yeah.
So with that being said, man, and this is something that I share with Kanye, that you have to get to a level where you're able to meet your audience where they are. Like, I understand fourth dimension and, you know, the chakras and, you know, things of that nature, you know, metaphysics and things of that nature. I understand that, but that's not common knowledge. So when you go on television and you're speaking to an audience, and the audience, you don't know if everybody knows about metaphysics and chakras and fourth dimensions and all that.
Right.
Things will get lost in translation, you know. And another thing, it was a lot, man. It was a lot. You're doing stuff like that. And then also with the extreme patronage that was being showed, man, it was like, for a lot of people, it was unbearing and it was a little over the top. Now, I understand that, you know, man, you could try to fight what people perceive as hatred with hate. Well, you can fight it with love. It's going to go either way.
Right.
Hate is always accompanied by destruction. Love is always accompanied by production. So with that being said, man, we as black people in America, man, we have endured so much up to this point, man, and we continue to endure every day. We live in a society where, man, systematically, through legislation, certain things that has held us back over the years. Then you have people that say, oh, man, that's nothing, that don't matter, that was the past. But the laws that were made in the past are the same laws that we are abiding by today.
Right, right, right.
And with that being said, man, look, you had some people saying, yeah, Kanye, he was up there saying all this stuff that, you know, we need as a people and we need as a country. But the man that he was saying it to is a man who stands against all the stuff he was saying. Well, in my opinion, if you're going to be saying something to some people, I think that is good, and you're trying to evoke change, I think it's best to say it to the people that are on the other side of whatever your request is.
Whatever you believe.
Because if you're saying it to like-minded people, then there's no need for having a conversation. You all are on the same page.
Right.
You have to, like, if you are in a position of power, you are in a position of having a voice, I believe that you have to use your voice, man, in order to uplift the people. I look at the likes of Fela Kuti. I look at the likes of Marion Makeba. I look at the likes of Bob Marley, like musicians, Michael Jackson, people who, you know, use their voice to bring forth change, man, not just a change, but a reform, which is a change for the better. Now, a lot of people were saying, well, I don't think that he was the man to do it or this and that. But this is the thing. He is the man with the voice.
And the platform. You know, it's funny. I've been talking to GL about we're talking to GLC, frequent collaborator with Kanye West, childhood friend of West. They reunited as of late, and he's largely been responsible for a lot of the connections West has been making in the city of Chicago locally. And as you can hear from the way he speaks, giving Kanye a lot of the information he needs to make sure that he's armed with information when he utilizes his voice and utilizes his platform. And so, you know, big thanks to GLC for jumping on. GL, we were talking all throughout the show about the value of using platform, and no matter how large or small your platform is, to affect change in the immediate area and space around you. So what you said really encompassed everything we've been talking about with the show. But I want to jump really ququickly to something else that Ye tweeted earlier today, just to shed some light on it in the background, right? There's this movement called Blexit, which is a play on words, of course, from what's happening overseas with Brexit. And it's about African Americans, black people, leaving the Democratic Party to become a part of the Republican Party. And Candace Owens is one of the leaders of this movement. It's her movement, right? Did she create Blexit?
Say it once again. You said,
yeah, I was saying, is Candace Owens, is she the one who created Blexit in the first place?
To be honest with you, brother, I have enough information on Blexit. I have done no research on it. And when I speak, I like to speak from a level of being informed. But I believe, I can just say that I believe, and I do not know for certain. I believe that it's her company or her movement, but I don't know a lot about it.
Well, she's definitely one of the prominent voices, or at least the spokesperson for that movement. So we'll say that. We don't know if she's the starter, the founder, but she is one of the prominent voices in this Blexit movement trying to get black people.
Because I don't know her. Like, I don't know her. So I can't vouch for her. I can't give her any, like, you know, I don't know her.
Right. So I'm getting here. So I'm getting to this tweet that Ye posted that said, I introduced Candace to the person who made the logo for Blexit. And he said that he doesn't have any association with Blexit and distanced himself from the organization altogether. But I do know back in the day, back in April, I think it was, not back in the day, but a few months ago, he tweeted that he liked and admired the fact that Candace was an African-American woman who decided for herself what political views she'll have. And her views were, you know, to support the Republican Party. And she's also another one who said that blacks are on what they call the so-called Democratic plantation. And but he's since distanced himself from her. Can you just walk us through, as much as you may know, the relationship between Kanye and Candace, and why did he tweet to clear up this whole idea that he made the logo for this organization?
Well, the thing is, he didn't. So
that's right, right. That's why he tweeted it. Okay.
Because I know for a fact that he didn't. And I know for a fact that he never approved that going out with anybody saying that he had anything to do with it. He never approved that. So this is the thing. I don't know her. And she's not like somebody that I be around like that. But I know for a fact that he did not approve that. And I know that he didn't do that design.
And he tweeted that he felt used by that movement, too.
Man, like, you bring people around and people have an agenda, and, you know, especially, you know, somebody who is in a position where they're going through a healing process, where they're being diagnosed for mental illness and this and that, and you come around trying to flood them with your agenda.
Hmm. Do you have enough time?
I don't think that's cool, man. Just in my personal opinion, but I don't know her, so I'm not going to say that that's what her plan was, but mm-hmm. from the way things were executed and the fact that he didn't have anything to do with that, I look at it like this, man. Mm-hmm. And the reason, one of the reasons that I know that we had a conversation the other day, and I simply wrote down views on both parties simply as, okay, you look at our position in America. When I say our position, I'm saying the African-American community. Over 90% of African-Americans work for people that are not of African-American descent. We spend $1.5 trillion a year and only spend 0.5% of that with ourselves, with our own ethnicity. We spend enough money to be the ninth richest country in the world. And we only spend 0.5% of that money with African-American businesses. We are in a situation where, man, we have to use our voices to spread USUMA, which is unity, you know. We have to spread economic empowerment. We got to use our voices to spread things that's going to make it work, man. And All the years that we've been in America, we've been under the guise of both parties, either Republican or Democrat. We are still pretty much dead last statistically wise in economics, like in household income and things of that nature. In the last 20 years, we are the only group whose household income has decreased.
I want to pause you right there. We're going to bring that point right back on the other side of the break. We're talking to GLC, an artist, a businessman, a close friend of Mr. West. And not only does he know these numbers and talk about these things, but he also has some business ventures of his own that I want to get into and talk about what he's done for Diet High School and promote some of the things that he's been involved in. You're listening to WGN Nightside. It's Noma T. Pongo.
I'm trying to keep my faith. We on an ultralight beam. We on an ultralight beam. This is a God dream. This is a God dream. This is everything.
We are talking to GLC, artist, businessman, scholar, friend of mine. GL, thank you so much. Before we went to break, you were talking about the circulation of African-American dollars and resources. Continue on that point you were making.
You know, a lot of times we have people saying that, you know, these are things that we need to obtain, or this is something that we can never do, and this and that. But we've done it. We've done it in the past, man. We had Black Wall Street. We had Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Greenwood District. We had, we had Bronzeville, man. You know right. what I'm saying? Like, right here in Chicago. We had very prominent Elijah Muhammad had 79th Street, like Cottage Grove, up and down, prominent Black businesses that was thriving. You know, we have to get to a point where we begin to show patronage. I look at social media, man, and but going back to the economic thing, I'm sorry for like getting off.
No, I was perfect.
It all started with how we was talking about political, like Republicans or Democrats. Man, I said, we've been through all this as a people, ups and downs, and this and that, for all these years that America has been established. It's been under the guise of both parties, either or. So I look at them as one bird, two wings, left wing, right wing, same bird.
Right.
And with that being said, man, we have to mobilize as a people, man. It should be something where, you know, people that feel like that are middle class or poor people form their own political party, man. And we have to get results. You know, we have to rock with who's going to give the results. But no matter who's in office, man, we got to be willing to have the conversation. So before we take action and do what's needed on our ends, or even as we are taking action and doing what's needed on our ends, hey, man, we let them know, like, hey, check this out, man. Y'all could be a part of this agenda. And we're yielding results. We have a proof of concept that this works. This is an agenda to empower the community, man, to bring businesses back, to bring back the trades into our public schools, you know. So because college ain't for everybody. Somebody might want to, you know, be a carpenter or an electrician and be making like $60 an hour, you know?
Right, right. I want to get this in before I got to run to news in just a moment, but I love this conversation. This is GLC. You can follow him at GLC The Ism. Actually, he posted something very interesting on his Instagram stories. I won't even leak what it is. You guys just got to go follow him and see what he posted, but it does relate to this conversation. But before I let you go, talk about where we can find out about these vegan treats that you have, as well as this healthy alkaline water that you're a part of as well. Because you're taking a lot of what you're doing and creating businesses, creating jobs in these different communities, and I want to make sure we elevate that too.
Oh, gratitude, brother. So, yeah, man, I have a vegan dessert company. It's called Ism Cakes. Right now we're located, we are distributed out of Lighthouse Grill in Hyde Park in the South Loop, Wilma's Famous Barbecue out in Dalton, Windy City Barbecue in the South Loop. Man, it's a lot of places. Majani's on the east side, 71st and Exchange. I don't want to forget nobody, but oh, the Black Mall on 79th and Rhodes. It's a lot of businesses that rock with us. We also have an alkaline water company called Evolve Alkaline Water. We're being sold out of Lighthouse Grill as well as Freestyle on 51st and Prairie. And there's a few other options as well. So we're doing that. And also I teach a class at Whole Foods once a month. I teach people how to make vegan food, healthy, nutritional, mineral-rich food for cheap.
You know? I love
just,
it.
Just to disarm the misconception of it's expensive to eat healthy, man.
Man, his name is GLC The Ism. Thank you so much. He's an artist, close confidant to Kanye West. But beyond the fact that he is the one who is arming West with the information, like even those tweets, the platform that West was talking about, I'm not going to say GLC wrote them, but I know he gave him the information that informs the more coherent views that he has. So thank you for sharing some light on those views and what you're doing in the community. I appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you, man. Just remember, each one teach one.
You're listening to WGN Nightside. It's Donna T. Pongo. You're tuned in to WGN Nightside. This is the home stretch. It's Doma T. Pongo. It's DJ Cash Era producing tonight. Cash, how you doing so far, man? You still up with me? You riding?
I'm always up, man.
Always,
like
prime
man. Hours for me.
By the way, if you guys missed the beginning of the show, already up on WGNRadio.com, you can check out my interview with Nicholas Cummings, who is on the board for the Cook County Board, Bar Association, excuse me. We were talking about judges and voting, and we opened the show with these early voting tallies that really had me excited, that had me energized. And then we talked to GLC, who just got off the phone, who's close friend of Kanye West. And, you know, we really expanded that conversation about what political activity actively looks like, about people of color being able to coalesce and have their own businesses and women-owned businesses and getting those resources that they need to get to the next step in their careers and what it is that they're trying to build. And on that note, we also have a special guest. She is the founder of the I Can Collective. They have a conference coming up soon for that very reason. This business conference and the I Can Collective has the mission of connecting diverse entrepreneurs and marginalized people to business opportunities, mainly those people who want to create their own opportunities. So with that, here is Afenya Montgomery. What's going on?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Cash, I got a surprise for you, by the way. You may not know this, or maybe you do.
I feel like I do.
I told you her name.
Yeah.
Because you can read. Her name is Afenya Pongo Montgomery.
Yes.
And.
Which means you two are related somehow.
Yes.
Yes.
She is my sister.
Thank you so much. Wow. Very nice to meet you.
You're a smart cookie.
You know, nice to meet
Shockingly, that degree that I am still paying for might have paid off a little bit.
She's the brains behind this whole operation. She knew years ago. She was like, your sister's online too. How yep. did you know? Because you have the same life. But thank you, Afenya, for calling in. Afenya Pongo Montgomery, once again, is the founder of the ICANN Collective. What is the ICANN Collective?
The ICANN Collective is the Innovation Collaboration Accountability Network, and it's all about pairing diverse entrepreneurs to resources and access to potential business collaborations that allow them to create, launch, and scale a viable business.
What made you even put this whole thing together? Because I know, I mean, this was remarkable, and I could brag on this, Cash, because, you know, I've already given you the disclaimer that there is some nepotism going on here. But it's funny, you know, this has been in effect for over a year now, or is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over a year now. And I went to the first conference and left with so much information that I ended up starting my own consulting firm, a multimedia consulting firm, at the top of this year, due largely in part to the information I got from the ICANN Collective on that first conference. And what's remarkable about Afenya is she's an MBA. She has a master's in nursing and also works as a healthcare professional. But you transitioned adding not only what it is that you do in your day job, but uh-huh. you started doing consulting work on the side. What was that evolution like, and how did that become the ICANN?
Okay, so as you stated, my background is in healthcare, so I have a nursing degree, and I decided that I wanted to start my own healthcare consulting firm. And it was difficult, like more than I even expected, and I'm such a researcher that I expected a rough road, but it was very difficult getting the information and resources that I needed to build that business to what I wanted it to be. And so as I was meeting people, going out to events, talking to a lot of different business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs, I thought about what I was going through and figured that other people are most likely going through it too, and decided to start this. It started off in coffee shops, meeting up with people and having just conversations about building business, and it became a thing, and people started coming out and saying that it should be more, and so I decided to dedicate more time and more of my efforts to creating an actual space, safe space, as you guys were talking about earlier, safe space for entrepreneurs to learn and grow together.
Okay, so the conference is coming up in November. What's happening at the conference? Who will be there? What can we look forward to? What is this whole thing? How is it culminated?
Oh, it's awesome, because we like to put together panel discussions, have interactive workshops, and keynotes all in one space. So people who learn differently get to see things from different perspectives. So we have panels on things like balancing your 9-to-5 in your business, raising capital for your business, going from idea to execution, and self-care for entrepreneurs, because we know that self-care is a buzzword right now, but what does it really mean for an entrepreneur to really take that time out for self-care? And we have awesome speakers. So we have the CEO of Caravata, a hair care company that is doing awesome things. We have Nakia Nichelle, a media personality. We have Rashidat, who is a health and wellness lifestyle influencer. We have so many awesome people. And very importantly, we have a keynote speaker who is Amara Enya, who is very much in the news these days, but she is all about smashing goals and creating those opportunities for herself. So I thought she'd be a great speaker for this.
Yeah, before she even announced her run, I believe she was already booked to speak at the conference. And
yes.
Little did Afenya know that Amara Enya would get the endorsement of Chance the Rapper and Kanye West, and it was already booked to be the keynote for this event. But aside from that, before she jumped into politics, Amara Enya, Dr. Amara Enya, has a PhD in a number of disciplines, but is also, not a number of disciplines, it's one PhD, but has education in a number of disciplines, but is also a public policy consultant. And when you selected Amara for the keynote, what was it that you saw back then mm-hmm. that made you want to go that way? And what is it about that, the knowledge that she brings, that made you want to tap her to be the keynote for the conference?
Well, the name of the conference is #GoalGetHer. So it's all about embracing your dreams, conquering your goals, and building business. And so I felt like Amara is definitely what I would call a dream chaser. She has started from where several of us have and has created such an amazing path for herself. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that really spoke to the conference. And what people might not know is what she has done for the entrepreneurial landscape here in Chicago. So she was a large part of Blue 1647 that became Blue Lacuna. And so that is a business and tech incubator that was created for Black entrepreneurs and multicultural leaders in the tech and business world. So I think that, you know, that background combined with her ability, as you said, to get an education in all of those different disciplines, and now to be running for a second time as mayor of Chicago. I mean, what more could you ask for when you talk about a go-getter?
We're talking to Afenia Montgomery, who is the founder of the ICANN Collective. You can get tickets to the conference on November 17th.
Yes.
The ICANNCollective.org. That's the ICANN, the letter I-C-A-N, collective.com. Excuse me, not .org. .com, the ICANNCollective.com. Where's the event going to be held? When is it? And how much are tickets?
Okay, so the event will be held in Bronzeville at The Connection, which is 4321 South Cottage Grove in Chicago. And it will be Friday, November 16th, for our pre-conference mixer, which will feature a vocal performance from Kia Tramiel, Gifted Keys. She's super awesome. If you listen to WGN and watch WGN, you may have seen her on both networks. And then we also have the speaker day, so the full access conference day is Saturday, November 17th, and that's from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the same place, The Connection in Bronzeville. Tickets
awesome.
Are $150.
Tickets are $150, worth every penny. You guys can definitely come out. Afenia Montgomery, the founder of The ICANN Collective. Again, they're available at theicanncollective.com. I'll be moderating a few panel discussions there as well. Before I let you go, and we were talking about safe spaces, and there have been a conversation about the need for safe spaces. Like, why is there this focus on, you know, on certain types of businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone could use this knowledge, you know.
Yes. Everyone can use this knowledge, but what I have found is that women and people of color have less access to resources. We are not always in environments that allow us to network and build in the way that we need to create profitable and viable businesses. So this is designed to give people that opportunity, but it's open to everyone. So what I pride myself on is having, when I say diverse, entrepreneurs, it truly is a diverse environment because diversity of thought is so important to me. So people from all types of backgrounds sharing information, sharing resources, and building networks is what makes the ICANN Collective what it is, and that's what it's all about.
Well, I love it. I was going to ask, what are the things that diverse entrepreneurs face that others don't? Like, what is it that women business owners face that others don't?
Oh, well, we have women, especially Black women, have less access to capital. So when we are trying to build a business, what is one of the most important things that you need? Money, right?
Yeah.
So women and people of color don't have that access. And it's not just on an individual level. It's when you're approaching banks. It's when you're approaching investors, venture capitalists. So a lot of times also for people who have not grown up in an environment that fosters those ideas of building a business, people don't know where to start. So there are great ideas that either never come to fruition or that before the business can get legs falls apart. So I want to build a space for people to really create something that is built to last and build brands that can allow us to be as competitive as some of our counterparts are. So those are some of the things. And I think access to funding, access to the conversations, and access to just a seat at the table and a voice in the room is so important. And that's something that women and minority entrepreneurs do not always have. So that's why that's important to me.
November 17th, the tickets are $150. The ICANN Collective on Instagram, the ICANN Collective, that's ICANN Collective, .com is the website where you can purchase tickets, and it's all about business. It's, the keynote is Amara Enya. I'll be moderating a few panels, and it's all curated by Afenya Montgomery. Thank you so much for calling in. Staying up late, sis. I appreciate it.
Of course, anytime.
It's my big anytime. Sister. WG at Night Side is Dova T. Pongo. Be back in a minute.
You ready, man? Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Yeah. What you know about going out? Oh, this is perfect home stretch music right here. It's Dova T. Pongo, WG at Night Side. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, for listening in. It's been a jam-packed show. We talked about the Chicago Humanities Festival, and we just got off the phone with Afenya Montgomery, who is the founder of the ICANN Collective. And we've got a few texts coming in. Let's read them. You guys can text your questions, comments, all that good stuff to 312-981-7200. We've got this text. Let me find one that really caught my attention, which I think was a great point. 630 texted and said, can we stop banging this drum that women and minorities have few opportunities? It's 2018. And I think a lot of folks agree with you. I think a lot of people would agree that it's 2018 and we should not have to bang this drum that minorities and women don't have the opportunities. But unfortunately, it's true. There's a study I just tweeted out. You guys can follow me on Twitter at D-O-M-E-T-I underscore. That's at Domiti underscore. And there's this article in Forbes, Why Minorities Have So Much Trouble Accessing Small Business Loans, came out this year, January of 2014. And it says, despite the fact that minority-owned small businesses grew by 79% from 2007 to 2017, according to findings from the U.S. Department of Commerce Minority Business Development Agency, there have not... African Americans and women-owned businesses are much less likely to be approved for small business loans when compared to their white counterparts. Now, they try to explain this in the Forbes article, and again, you can read that on my Twitter page. It says these discrepancies have made minority business owners more likely to not apply for small business loans, usually out of fear of rejection. And so this is why you have goals in the state of Illinois, for example, where minority and women owned business owned, they have the state is mandated to achieve a goal of giving a certain percentage of contracts for state projects that they contract out to women or minority owned businesses. They had to put this parameter in place that, mind you, hasn't been met by neither Democratic or Republican administrations for the most part. I think in recent years, Governor Rauner has been doing much better than his predecessor, Governor Pat Quinn, in addressing this issue. But it had to be legislated because it was so hard to get minority owned businesses these contracts. When there was an RFP, a request for proposal at the state level, and it came out and black businesses would apply for these opportunities, they wouldn't get them. They wouldn't get the contracts for a myriad of reasons. And this is something that we have to talk about and something that's actually happening. It's not something that we just make up because it feels good or sounds good. It actually is quite the opposite. I wish it was something we didn't have to talk about. We'll continue. Data recorded in 2016 found that white business owners start their businesses with an average of $106,000 in working capital compared to African-American owned businesses, which started with an average of just $35,000. Right. So when these people go in and they go get loans, they expect to be treated the same way. But the studies bear it out that that is not the case. And so what ends up happening is people pull together their resources from, you know, they might pull into their 401k or, you know, go into the equity of their home. They find different ways to fund their businesses, and they go to conferences like the ICANN Collectives and find out ways to get those resources by other means. Different investors. They go straight to VCs. They apply for business grants. And, you know, there are a myriad of reasons. Again, this is all posted on my Twitter page. So check this out. So I know we sound like a dead horse when we bring this up. But if you're passionate about it, too, you know, do some research about it and find out how you can help, how you can invest in organizations that are trying to close this gap so that this isn't something that we have to talk about. I want to talk to Cash about this, though. It is officially Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
The best holiday ever.
It's the worst holiday ever.
Wow.
The worst.
Don't bring that blasphemy over here.
Better than Christmas?
In some ways, yeah.
Better than Valentine's Day, G?
Oh, most definitely. I can't stand Valentine's Day.
Okay, I well, that's arguable. That's debatable.
Can't stand Valentine's Day.
I kind of don't like it either. But have you ever wondered how Christmas even came to be?
Christmas or Halloween?
I mean Halloween, I mean to say. Do you know?
Tell
me what you know. Well, you tell me what you know so far.
I know nothing. All I know is I get to dress up as whatever I want to be. Usually it's something gory. And I get to go haunted house hopping every single weekend that I'm not working.
What do you think you might be this year?
Well, I did a lot of my dressing up this past weekend. So Friday night, I was Bugs Bunny from the Toon Squad from Space Jam.
Nice.
Saturday, I did special effects makeup where I had a can. It was an illusion that a can had been smashed into my eye. That was a really good one. And then tomorrow, or well, today rather, at the WGN holiday party, I will be Mr. Potato Head.
That's good.
Yes.
I'm.
What will you be? Did you take my idea?
What? No. What? Oh no, I didn't. Okay, so Cash gave me this idea last week, and I was asking her who I should be for Halloween.
It was weeks ago.
It was weeks ago. What'd you say, Dr. Doolittle?
Yeah.
Because I guess I kind of look like.
It's an easy costume. All you need is a lab coat.
I found an easier costume.
Which is yourself?
Someone from the 70s, though. So I just looked at my closet. I got a turtleneck. I got some berets at home. I put on a beret. I put on some glasses.
So lame.
And I was a Black Panther from the 70s. But when I put on a trench coat, I looked more like the Matt Goldie from the, I look more like a 70s pimp or something than a Black Panther.
I gave you a great opportunity here, and you did not take it.
You did.
I'm so disappointed.
But Kia looked great. My girlfriend had put on an Afro wig. No, she did an Afro wig. She didn't do Tupac.
Oh my God.
She put on an Afro wig. It was all last minute. Like, we were going to a Halloween party, and I didn't want to be the only person that didn't dress up.
Right, because you didn't want to listen to my suggestion, so
I threw something together. I had a turtleneck and a beret, and I said, I'm a Black Panther today.
Will you be attending the party today, later on today?
I will be coming to the WGN party later on today.
And you're going to be a Black Panther again? Or will you surprise us and do something different?
I will try to do something different.
I feel like it's not going to be anything different.
I need to wash my turtleneck. So if I don't get to do laundry.
So if you don't do laundry, then you're just going to be done with T-Pongo.
Yes.
Wow.
And I'm going to get laughed out
of the
studios.
Isn't that what you did last year? You didn't even dress up last year.
I was boring last year. It was bad. But the origins of Halloween.
Yes, please share with me where this came about from.
Dates back to the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain. The Celts lived 2,000 years ago in the area that's now Ireland, and they had this festival that marked the end of the summer. In the harvest, and it was the beginning of the dark, cold winter, a time of the year that was often associated with human death. The Celts believed that, and I'm getting this from the History Channel's website, the Celts believed that on the night before the new year, the boundary between the worlds of the living and the dead became blurred. On the night of October 31st.
I like this voice you're adding on top of it.
They celebrated Samhain.
It's really nice.
When it was believed that the ghosts of the dead returned to Earth.
Hmm.
Isn't there an echo button in here? That would have been a great time for
it. I don't know. That's not good. I don't know.
But yeah, so that's the origin of Halloween. And
I like it. I just like scaring kids, honestly.
It's really scary. Are you going to allow people to trick-or-treat at your home? Because I am not.
Yes, I am passing out candy tomorrow.
I am the Grinch who stole Halloween. That's what I'll dress up as. The
That's
Grinch.
What you should have done. The Grinch, yeah. Why don't you pass out candy?
It's not my thing. Not my thing. Well, I live on the second floor. I live very high up in my building.
Oh, you live in an apartment.
Yeah, yeah, in a two flat.
Okay, yeah, that's different.
And so I got to go all the way downstairs every moment, and it's just
stay downstairs.
Bye, humbug. That's how I feel about Halloween.
Wow, you really are the Grinch. No, I have a house, so it's just one level. So I'll be out here. I'm passing out chips and Twizzlers.
Giving candy to the kids. Look at Cash. Giving candy to the kids.
I grew up trick-or-treating, and I loved going trick-or-treating because every year I dressed up as something different, and it was just a great time.
I love it. I love it.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll be back in a minute. WGN Nightside. Had a lot of fun with you guys tonight. You can follow DJ Cash Era how? What's your social media?
Everything is at DJ Cash Era. DJ Cash like money, era like a new era hat.
I love it. You can follow me at Dometi, D-O-M-E-T-I underscore. And if you look on Instagram, you will see if I decided to dress up and who I decided to be. She's going to be Mrs. Potato Head or Mr. You're going to do the mustache?
Mr. Potato Head.
You're going to do the mustache.
Because the piece that I'm wearing, you can like move different aspects of the face all around.
I have no idea what I'm about to witness tomorrow.
It's all right. Today. You'll see. You're going to see an outfit tomorrow and then a different outfit on my Instagram tomorrow.
So you guys, make sure you tune in to WGN Radio's Instagram, because it's going to be very strange. Actually, there's a big fuzzy spider on my microphone right now, which I am just noticing at the end of the show, and it's creeping me out.